Hi guys, welcome to the Accounting Tech Tar Pit, presented by Early Adopters Hub, the accelerator for accounting tech. I'm your host, Jack Teal, and this is a podcast for accounting tech startup founders focused on no BS, candid conversations about the challenges and benefits of building a startup in the accounting industry. Good to be back again with Johan and Guy, continuing the conversation that we started talking to you about your journey with Ignition, and now we're keen to kind of see or have a chat with you through the lens of, you know, you as an investor in accounting tech, or, you know, even if you're investing in tech more broadly. Perhaps given the time and where the market is right now, hopefully this doesn't age poorly, but, you know, investment conditions are very different to where they were, you know, even 12 months ago. So, you know, how do you see it? Do you think it's a hard time to raise money? Do you think it's actually a good situation for a startup? You know, how do you see the market right now, Guy?
Yeah, I mean, investment valuations are kind of back where they were probably like early days of Ignition, like in terms of multiples. And I think we need to split out kind of early stage. So, you know, less than a million ARR, kind of like proving that you have a right to exist and potential. And then later stage. So later stage right now, which is like B, C, D, E rounds, which typically equates to, you know, US $5 million of ARR and above. Huge emphasis and shift from not only just growth. So it was all about, can you acquire customers? Can you win the market? Can you do so reasonably efficiently? Not incredibly, but reasonably. What's your roadmap look like for the future? And how much money do you need, right? And that was kind of the mindset. That's all changed to being a revenue focus and cash burn focus. So what's your revenue, what's your burn or your loss? Are you a rule of 40 company or 50 or 60 or 70, which basically means are you growing and is your burn as a percentage of your revenue? Like if you took your growth rate, 60%, and so you're doing $10 million of revenue, burning $2 million, so spending $2 million more than you're making. So spending 12, so that's 20%. It's like, okay, so if you're growing 80, less 20%, you're a rule of 60 company. We're happy, right? But more in vogue is being break even, or I feel like the break even definition is still up for debate. So, you know, old adage is turn off your sales and marketing altogether. Like, just kill it. Doesn't exist anymore. Are you break even? I feel like new break even is like with your sales and marketing, are you break even? Or do you have a path to it, right? Like, is it like there's no point in rocking the boat because you're 4 months off potentially being there, or 5 months or 12 months? So you got that. So switch from new customer number or total customer number to revenue and burn. And then you got the reduction in valuation multiples, mostly because of, you know, recent market sentiment, but mostly driven by the fact that you can earn money on cash for like the first time ever. So breaking that down, you put money in the bank, you actually get a return, whereas for years it's been like, put money in the bank, I get 0.4% interest a year, inflation's 2 or 3%, I may as well not leave my money in the bank, I should try and do something more with it. And so you had all this money flow into venture capital, basically, and private equity across the world. They all need to deploy the capital, which meant valuations went up because there were being lots of competition, kind of like Australia's housing market. Go to an auction, like stuff goes wild for no real reason. So that's been the big shift. And so what we're seeing is early stage deals where there's high growth companies, high attraction of users, still getting done at high multiples. Still a lot of promise for the future because they can go and win the whole market still. If you're a more aged company, you know, you're over there. And then as we were just talking about prior to this kicking off, if you're actually legit AI or you have the ability to be something that people have never seen before that could work and change the world, you might get an incredibly frothy valuation on the fact that someone like Microsoft, Google, Oracle might actually want to come along and buy you.
Guy, just to actually, Jack touched on it a little bit, but do you have any perspective? I mean, is this whole shift, is that a healthy, positive shift that's just killing off a lot of buzz that would have never gone anywhere without a lot of money, cheap money prompting it for quite a while? Or do you see it's a negative because it is really hurting a lot of early stage startups or or you think it's not positive or negative? Do you have any view on that?
The last time there was a downturn, so you know, just before Ignition kicked off, so post GFC, was sort of in a slump for years and years after the dot-com boom as well. I actually think it can be a positive. Like a lot of today's transformational companies were founded at that time. And not trying to big up ourselves, but it more just like, you know, the Facebooks, the Instagrams, the WhatsApps, the like, yeah, go through zero, you know, like all of them, right? And so I actually think it's not a bad thing, because it's scarcity creates innovation that doesn't require capital. If you have lots of capital going into mild innovation, it's kind of the frothiness is kind of covering up that the product perhaps isn't actually solving a real problem. It's just popular based on marketing efforts. And I'm not trying to be rude or condescending, just that's kind of what happened. So I see it as good for the overall next iteration of startups and scale-ups to come. But it's pretty brutal and people are learning whether or not they're a platform or a feature right now as a later stage company. And yeah, candidly, there's a whole bunch of companies running out of money who are going to be acquired and rolled up into platform companies. And you know, I don't say that with a smile on my face, because like the journey's hard, it's rough, and that's not what they intended. But there's just a lot of M&A happening at the moment where you know, prices are like below the last round, and you know, dreams haven't come true. So I think that part's sad. Don't necessarily think it's bad for the overall economy, but yeah, it's just a little bit tough out there. But I think innovation will rise from the ashes, and that's the good thing.
And I think we share a little bit of that sentiment, in that I think there's some positives to take for startups, in that, you know, what if you are able to make it through, it feels like you're going to potentially be in quite a good position, you know, rather than being one of the startups who was able to raise a lot of money but finds out that the fundamentals just aren't there. I mean, from your perspective, we've got a lot of listeners. Well, I like to think we have a lot of listeners. Probably don't have too many, but we've got a few people listening who you know, might be thinking about raising some money or are an early stage startup and trying to pitch themselves. Two questions for you. You know, what are you looking for as an investor from an early stage company? What do you really want to see? And do you know anyone else who invests in accounting tech? It just isn't very sexy.
I know many, many people. Typically when I invest, I'm not the only one who's investing. So it's quite a lot. I won't drop their names because I haven't asked them ahead of time. But happy to try and make introductions. If folks are looking to raise, I want to have some feedback. A deck that explains, so investment deck is the most important thing, because that's like it's like the business card, or it's sort of like how you present yourself, or the first interactions with the, you know, the girlfriend or boyfriend's parents, you know, like it's important. And so in there, problem statement, so what problem are you solving, size of market, how big is this market, who are your competitors, and why you will do a better job, or what features you have that they don't. Your team and why you are the right people to solve the problem. So that could be industry knowledge. It could be the fact that you've worked at startups, scale-ups. Most of the time, like personally, I like people who self-identify with the problem that they're going to solve, because the passion and the grit typically flows through. So it's a personal preference. How much you're looking to raise, and having thought about that, what you're going to spend the money on. And it can't just be to like launch an integration with someone who you think is going to be the be all and end all of your business growth. I think the last thing, so it's typically like 11 slides, like it's not a lot. It really just needs to be short, sharp, and succinct, to the point that I understand, or an investor understands what you're going after and why, and that you've thought about it. I stage wise, I'm probably like early MVP onwards. I struggle to correlate a great presentation with the inability to see a product working, and that equals value. But that's me. Doesn't mean I wouldn't do it. typically I've done it in the past, but it's typically where I was an investor in someone previously or a company they worked at or I'd known them and they were kicking off something new. And I'm like, okay, cool. I will take that risk. I'll make that conscious decision knowing that it could all go to zero, but I did so with like the risk in mind. Is that helpful? I mean,
it's
a good pitch deck. Like look like Airbnb's original deck. I feel like it's one of the best, simplest decks that has ever existed because they're explaining a brand new concept right at the time.
I think what I was keen and what you said was kind of what some of those personal preferences.
Okay.
There's a few things in there that you kind of had, but that's fine. In terms of the actual vehicle itself, I think you mentioned that, you know, if you were to do this again, that you'd raise early on a safe note. What are the benefits of that versus other investment vehicles? Why is that kind of an attractive option for early stage?
It's very founder friendly. It doesn't fly so well in Australia. It's not as common. Australians like to know what we're getting for our money. So share certificates, right? Like they're real. Whereas SafeNote is great. It allows the entrepreneur to get some more runs on the board before they have to price the company because you don't know really what it's worth. For the investor coming in, there's sort of three different facets of a safe note. So there's kind of like a valuation ceiling. There's a discount rate. And there's can be a coupon attached to it as well. And so I'll run through all of those. A ceiling might be, we don't know what the value of the company is, but our next qualifying fundraising round of more than $1 million, right? Whatever that value is, we think the fair ceiling, so to give you return, is that you don't pay more than $5 million when your money converts into shares. Even if the round's higher, it just means you will get more shares, right? So there's a safety net for the investors, but for the entrepreneur, they might be not having to value their company now at $2 million when perhaps it's going to 10, and so they kind of get the arbitrage of that delta. You've got a discount rate, which is in addition to the conversion mechanism of price, it's sort of like, okay, you came in early, so effectively, if you gave me $100,000, 20% discount means that effectively you gave me $120,000. So that gets converted, right? So it's like another arbitrage thing. And the last bit is a coupon, which is interest and interest on the money that you put aside. Depending on the deal, it can be paid back on completion of the next round of funding, or it can just roll in as well. So most startups will go, there's a valuation ceiling and here's a discount. Occasionally, there's an interest coupon. The reason why you do that is because if you don't know, if no one else wants to put a value in the company, because remember they're going, we are saying it's worth X. And if you can't get alignment on all parties and what that is, this is like a way to kind of move past that. It also means typically you end up with less dilution earlier. So as a founder, it's better.
Okay, taking a bit of a step back, I think you covered a few very practical and useful things there. But yeah, if we take a step back, you've been on both sides as a founder and as an investor. What do you kind of like feel you've learned from those two unique perspectives on that journey?
On the founder side, I hope that for the companies that I back and even just for people who connect, that they can kind of just get an understanding perspective, whether that's someone to vent to, someone to talk about, you know, what's worked, pricing models and go-to-market motions and CAC, like all that sort of stuff. And I feel like I'd be helpful on, particularly coming out of Australia, like how do you meet US investors and or overseas investors or just investors generally in raising your next round? Probably the two areas that I'm helpful. The learnings I've managed to get is, what am I up to, like 30 companies or something. I get shareholders updates either every month or every quarter from the vast majority of them. And so I get to see kind of what they're reporting on and what their boards put together around frameworks reporting to shareholders, et cetera, et cetera. So great learnings for me because some of the things I've got involved with the later stage and some of them are way early, so majority of the earlier stage. So I think the crossover piece is I'm probably also more patient. Like I look at most of the money is sort of out of one or two entities, and one's a super fund and one's like a family trust. So being completely open and transparent, super fund, I can be incredibly patient. So I can kind of have two mindsets when investing. Super fund is like early stage startup, can't touch the money. I can stay in for as long as I want to. Like I'm 40 this year, I'm not 65 for 25 more years, right? So like the realistic, like me actually being able to touch it, use it, see it, aside from rolling over and investing in other things is sort of fairly limited. And so typically later stage things come out of the trust where it's like, I'm going to see that money sooner in theory. And the return might be a shorter hold. So I feel like I'm pretty good at picking out how to align with where someone is on the journey and hopefully being a good sounding board. As an investor, I understand that not everything goes to plan because it's my experience running a company. Best intentions, best well-laid plans. COVID happens. Like we were an events marketing-based company. COVID happens. We just ramped up our events marketing efforts on the view that we were going to triple down on that, and so all of a sudden there's no trade shows. It's like, okay, well, how do we pivot, right? Like that's normal. So I have a higher level of tolerance and understanding and probably appreciation as an accountant or what a forecast is, which is best assumptions laid out in a series of numbers.
I think that's a really important point, you know, whether it's the pressure that an investor can put on a founder to say, hey, this is what we need you to hit. These are the metrics you promised us and doesn't look like you're moving in the right direction and the impact of that versus a little bit more hands off, like, hey, I'm investing in you and I'm trusting you're going to figure this out. You know, I understand that maybe you got to pivot, you got to adjust. You might not hit this because you've got to move in a different direction. What should a founder be thinking about here? Like, is there a difference in objectives between the two parties? Or, I mean, obviously there should be an alignment, but have you seen situations where founders feel like, oh, you're making me go after revenue, which is a short-term thing, rather than me actually trying to really nail down product market fit? Or, you know, how do you see that relationship?
I think, once again, going back to that pitch deck, it's probably all a part of the story that you've told, right? Investor comes in and kind of like your clients wants clarity on what you think you're going to do. And if you 6 weeks in are like, actually, we need to pull up stumps and it's not going to work. We're not going to get there and we're going to have to do this. And you don't expect the person who's just given you their hard-earned cash and taken a risk on you to be questioning that. Like, I feel like that's a complete naivety. Now, most investors, and so piece of advice, never take someone's last 25, 50, 100, whatever the money is. Don't take the last bit, right? Like, make sure they've done it before. Make sure they understand, because I go in with that sort of high-risk attitude towards the fact I may never see the money again, in which case, only thing I'm concerned about is that founder going to grind it out? So, like, are they going to put absolutely everything in? And if the answer is yes and it still fails, I'm okay. It's more where they pull up stumps preemptively or they don't communicate well and that sort of stuff that I'll ever get agitated. And I might say, like, we need to have a chat. I'm not happy with where things are going. But like ultimately, the reality is you need to understand that typically, particularly if it's a fund, they're investing other people's money, potentially including your mum's and dad's super. So think about the onus of responsibility that sits with that person. Right, let alone they get paid based on the fact that you are successful and you did what you said you were going to do and we have a great outcome. They get paid on the gains. Like, that's their upside. They also get a small salary. And so if you're ignoring that and don't understand that coming into it, I feel like you know, it's not free money. It's not like you got a grant from the government who's just doing it to tick a box. Right? The upside is that you have someone, typically investors, particularly funds, who see a plethora of opportunities, businesses, they've made the decision to back you, and they can probably help you out with decision-making on based on data, trends, analysis, what they're seeing, what pitches they're hearing currently, like what's going on in the market, and perhaps ideas. And so I think the biggest thing is that open line of communication has served me really well over the years. But you also need to understand like who you're dealing with. And I don't mean that in a negative sense, it's just a matter of fact. Like, so I going in eyes wide open and telling a story and seeing that story through, whatever it is, like, you know, we probably didn't have the world's best Series A valuation. That's because we told people we were going to break even. We did go to break even. And then, yeah, sadly, it wasn't in vogue back then. And then we decided we hadn't this much market share. And so we raised a big growth round to go and get more aggressive and go after more customers. Right. But it was like, it's all stating an intention and follow through.
Guys, try and I think we're almost going to finish soon, but I'll try to squeeze that question in. Trying to challenge you a little bit. Let's see if I succeed or if I fail. But again, we're quite in a bit of a unique position quite often, kind of like sitting in the middle and seeing how those discussions happen between investors and startups. And maybe that's just our perspective or my perspective. Sorry, Jack, maybe I shouldn't include you in that. But quite often what you see in a pitch deck is a story that doesn't necessarily reflect reality and doesn't necessarily reflect the real conviction and direction that a founder has. It's more what they're trying to impress upon investors. Because if they don't, and they're trying to be a bit more realistic, you're not going to be interested in investing. And there's 10 other startups lined up that will tell a better story that sounds more appealing. So, and that quite often, I've seen it happen quite a lot. Then 6 months later, a year later, 2 years later, when there are issues and you do need to go back to investors, the dream that I sold you didn't quite happen. That can really backfire for both parties involved. So there's a lot of friction in that kind of like connection between investors and startups. So, I mean, do you have any advice or any lessons from the startup side or the investor side of how can you sell the dream so it's convincing compared to others in the market, but it's still not so far removed from reality that when things go bad, your investors will turn on you?
I think the biggest thing is it's a great question, but you need to sell the dream. But you probably also need to make sure you disclose how you think you're going to get there. Now, they might not be the first meeting, right? Because the whole, it's like a sales process. You're kind of trying to get in the door and as you get into due diligence, right? But they'll probably look to see the product roadmap at some point in time, depending on the firm and whatnot, particularly if it's a fund. And if that's the case, then you probably should have a fairly, like, these things all need to deliver for that reality to be plausible. Because if you have a problem and one of the steps along the journey, and once again, it's come back to communication, like, can't tell you how important there's a platform called Visible. We did monthly shareholder updates, always, up until, 2021. So, yeah, 8 years. Anytime we end up in a problem scenario, I needed help, no one was like, we have no idea what you've been up to with our money the last 6 months. There was never the... You didn't tell us that this could be a risk. And so my conversations were always like, hey, or they might even flag as like, hey, I'm not so sure you're going to get there. Do we need to do something to help? Or like, should we change course a little bit? And so I think the communication piece is super, super important because the investors will understand there's risk. But if you don't tell them what steps are involved in that risk and what has to go right, and then communicate how you're tracking, you go back to them 2 years later, to your point, if you haven't mentioned this and you drop it on them, they're not going to want to back you because they don't trust you. Whereas if you take them on the journey with you, very, very different conversation.
Maybe that's a good place to roll into our final question, because I think I'll ask you the tar pit question, but I think that is potentially a tar pit, because I imagine as a founder, you don't want to disclose what's not going well. It doesn't sound like a good thing to come warts and all every month and describe all the things that I've stuffed up to all the investors who I'm going to be coming back for, I know, in 6-12 months and asking for more money. I want it to be this amazing story. But other than that, which is really interesting, do you see any other classic mistakes from early stage founders when they come talk to you or pitch to investors or come back for another round? Is there anything that you just see time and time again that they just stuff up?
When they disclose or they think they have no competitors, doesn't even matter if it's like manual processes or whatever else, right? Like, it's like, call it out. Like, this is how the market does things. When they give you a CAC number and a customer number based on the future projections without any proven market channels. So it's like, okay, well, sure. But, you know, like, if you've closed 5 customers and that's cost you $5,000 each, sales and marketing spend all combined, I'm not exactly sure I back you getting to $5 per customer acquisition in 2 years' time. Like, yeah, prove me wrong. I'd love you to prove me wrong, but I just, yeah, I have a lack of faith, right? So I think just being cognizant of the story you're telling and bear in mind that almost every investor will go, okay, so they're going to hit half that revenue, maybe even a third, and it's going to cost them twice as much. That's literally the calculation they do in their head because you can't predict the future, so they're going to haircut the hell out of it and assume it's going to cost more and take longer. And it's nothing against you. It's just like if you go back and look at it time and time again, I'm pretty sure that's their experience from like deck to reality on when someone actually hits their targets. Doesn't mean they don't like your business either. It's more just the, are we going to run out of money too quickly is like the mindset in their head, and then what value are we going to give them. I think that's, I don't know if that's a topic necessarily, but the and the communication piece, there's a stupidly high correlation in my tiny little portfolio on people who are good at communicating and people who are like my 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 exes are all going to be out of the people that communicate well. I think it's important if we're thinking about it as a business owner, you like reporting to your shareholders, that's important. Reporting to your board, that's also important. But you're effectively telling the story of where your business is at, right? So it's a similar reason as to why people who do monthly board reports at a accounting firm or anywhere else typically have a high correlation of success. It's because they're analyzing, reviewing where they're at regularly and then calling out the things that are going wrong. And bad news is best delivered early. Doesn't matter who you are. And so, yeah, like I said, the ones that are going to be, yeah, the customer company, sorry, the investor logo things that, you know, like if you go to a venture fund website, they pretty much only put their rock stars or the people that have made them a lot of money up on the website, right? And like, yeah, almost all the ones that I would put on mine have had amazing investor communications. So
I love that you said bad news is best delivered early. I'm like, that could be on our website. We love delivering. Well, we don't love delivering bad news, but the hard truths.
Don't make it your mantra.
No. The hard truths, though, I think it's hard to find. There's a lot of cheerleaders out there, and it's very easy to get someone to tell you how great your idea is. And I think investors are one of those people who do give you the harsh truth. And
You don't want to learn that they're not happy with your progress or way of dealing with an issue when you've got 5-6 months runway left. You're going back and you haven't quite delivered what you said you would, and you're trying to raise capital. Because if your last round investor isn't putting their hand up to participate, particularly in the early stage, it makes it really hard. It doesn't mean they have to write the whole thing, but like it makes it really hard to convince somebody else that they should take the risk. Because your previous investor is going to be like, oh, I'm going to sit this one out. And like I said, it doesn't mean like if they're early stage and they can only write small checks, it's like typically they've got a reserve. They probably won't tell you this. They have a reserve of every fund to follow on in their great portfolio company. So if they're not following on, even if it's 50 grand or like 10% of what they put in last time, they're effectively saying either A, we're completely out of money, which happens occasionally, but more likely you go raise this and come back to you at the end if we're interested.
Awesome. Great place to finish. Thanks, Guy, for so much of your time. It was great talking to you in the first episode about your journey with Ignition and now to get your perspective from the other side. So super insightful, plenty in there for early stage startup founders to take. And thanks again. Really, really enjoyed chatting.
No worries at all. Thanks for having me, team.
Thank you once again for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are a potential founder in your early stages of developing a product or elsewhere in the journey struggling to achieve product market fit, we would love for you to reach out at www.earlyadoptershub.com. This has been another episode of the Accounting Tech Tar Pit presented by Early Adopters Hub, the accelerator for accounting tech.